Hello and welcome. This is Faithfully Memphis, and this is Emily Austin. I am your host this morning, and every Thursday morning at 8 a.m., we come to you and talk to you about the way faith is embodied in the lives of interesting people all over Memphis and our listening area, in addition to all over the country. Today, I am delighted to have on with me Larwinette Williams. Hey, Larwinette.
Hello, Emily. How are you?
I'm doing really, really well. We're going to be continuing our Behold It Unveiled series today with a conversation with Larwinette. And we're going to be just talking about your credentials, all that you've done creatively in your life. I mean, and it's a lot. It's a lot, right?
Well, I've been around for a long time now.
Well, I mean, we were talking off air just a minute ago about how you're the only person I think that we've ever had on the show who when I've done my research, I've actually had to go on to IMDb. So you're a legit actress.
I am a legit actress, yes.
And you have an incredible stage career.
Thank you. Yes, I have really truly been blessed.
But you've traveled all over the world, you've worked all over the world, but it all started right here in Memphis.
Right here in Memphis, it sure did.
Yeah. So Whitehaven High School.
Whitehaven High School, I'm a Tiger. In fact, we just celebrated our 40th reunion.
Wow.
Last month.
Those numbers don't match up with the person that I see in front of
me.
Well,
you know what? I'm so thankful for that.
Yeah.
I'm so thankful. It's like someone said, you don't look like what you've been through. I said, well, you know what? My mother had really, really good genes.
Yes.
And so I clearly had inherited a lot of that. So.
Well, I can tell that you have, for sure. So tell me a little bit about your upbringing in Memphis and what eventually, well, we're going to go through the whole swath of Larwinette today in the next hour, but give me that origin story.
Okay. Well, actually, yes, I am born, bred right here in Memphis, in South Memphis, Soulsville, USA.
Yeah.
And the funny part about a lot of that is that even though I was a part of the fabric of Soulsville, I was actually a lot outside of it as well. My mm-hmm. parents were really eclectic in what they liked for us to be a part of. And mm-hmm. so I went to Father Bertrand Elementary. So mm-hmm. I went to a Catholic elementary school. And then after eighth grade graduation, I went to Bellevue Junior High because I was in the optional program.
Yeah.
And then after that,
right,
I went to
Peabody,
Whitehaven.
Right,
exactly. Yeah. So you see, I went South Memphis and I went to Midtown, then mm-hmm. I went to Whitehaven. And my mother started me, well, I drove her crazy, actually.
Yeah. Were you an only child or did you have siblings?
Well, I am the second marriage baby.
Okay. I hear you loud and clear. My husband is a second marriage baby.
Okay.
So I know y'all's people.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. So my mother and father both were married before they married each other. And so they had children from their first marriages. And they got together and they had me. So I'm the second marriage and I'm the only one. So I'm the last one of the litter.
Yeah.
And I actually, like I said, I was really kind of all over the city. And they always wanted me to be involved in a lot of various different things.
Mm-hmm.
My father was a CPA. He was an accountant. And my mother, she was a nurse by trade. And so we just had the life. Now, I started driving her crazy because she was a nurse and she would work the graveyard shift.
Mm-hmm.
And
God bless graveyard shift nurses.
I tried that one time in my life and that was mm-hmm. hard. I said, I can't mm-hmm. do this. But I would drive her crazy because I was this little kid that I was active and she wanted to sleep when she mm-hmm. got home and I wanted to dance. And so she decided to put me in dance school.
Yeah.
So I started Art Link Letter Dance School on Getwell.
Yeah.
And I was the only little chocolate face in the bunch for, I think, maybe about 2 or 3 months. And then I asked one of my friends, would she come? And so we were the only two chocolate little faces in the bunch. But we really learned a lot and grew a lot. And that's where it all began for me.
Yeah.
I started out dancing. And I was there for about 10 years. Yeah. But in the middle of that, I started writing mm-hmm. and singing and doing all of that stuff. So I used to do it at church and,
yeah.
and all of that. And so I always tried to find ways to put groups together.
Yeah,
so that
kind
of extends to where I am now. You know,
yeah,
I was
yeah.
always that producer, director, administrator. Mm-hmm. I didn't know it, but that's who I was really created to be.
Yeah.
And so did all of that all through high school. When I was at Whitehaven, I did the All City, All West, All State choruses.
Wow.
I was a majorette. I was a pom-pom girl.
So,
you know,
like anything, any opportunity was that was there, you took it. And if their opportunity wasn't there, it sounds like you were the one creating it. You were just like jumping on
yeah.
how can I express who I
this
am?
Artistic
yes.
thing that was inside of
yeah,
me.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was vast because it wasn't just in one category, which I notice here in Memphis, a lot of people are that way. They may be gifted in one area, mm-hmm. but they're gifted in several other areas
yeah.
just as, you know, impactful. And when you go to other cities, it's not that way. Usually if they do have several gifts, it's one that's major.
Yeah.
And then yeah, here everybody's like so amazingly gifted and talented.
You know,
so.
I you're the first person I've ever spoken with who like articulated that, but I've observed the same thing mm-hmm. here in Memphis, you know, having lived in several different places.
Yeah.
People in Memphis, and I mean, maybe that's part of the hustle. It's part of the, like, this is what I want to extend myself outside mm-hmm. of the box that
I think it's in the water.
Yeah.
And this is why. Of course, you know, the history of us in the area of arts, it starts way, way, way back
yeah.
when. And of course, there was Bill Street and everything and all of the things happened, and the Elvis and all these wonderful, wonderful artists came from I think it's just literally in the water that Bluff City something, because when we go elsewhere, people, I was telling somebody recently, was telling a group recently, it's like we're royalty.
Yeah.
It really is. It's amazing. People find out that you're from Memphis and they lose it. You're from Memphis? Oh my God. I would get auditions purely because on my resume it said I was from Memphis.
I mean, maybe there's kind of a mystical quality to this city.
There's
something
talent.
Magical.
Exactly. It's,
yeah.
It's magical.
Yeah.
It's extreme talent. And I don't really know how to explain it, but it's real.
But we see it. It's observable.
We do. Well,
yeah.
We see it all the time. So it's not a big deal to us. We're like, here. But then when you go elsewhere, you say, wow, I know people that can sing, dance, play, all these things, so much more, you know, but
yeah.
it's just something about the Memphians.
So yeah. that's what you were doing at a young age. You were just, okay, I'm going to dance. I'm going to act. I'm going to sing. I'm going to be a majorette. And I bet you were creating different things to like, and you were putting together, you were community organizing. You were
exactly.
creatively organizing and bringing
putting
people together.
Putting groups together.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
writing little plays.
Yeah. Oh, I know that. Like, let's put on a show.
Right?
We're going to put on a show in our backyard.
Exactly. So it started then for me. And it was one of those things, you know, my mother wanted me to be practical,
yeah.
you know, and go to college and get a real, you know, something practical. But there was that artist inside of me that wanted to bloom and be an artist.
Yeah,
and so
yeah.
I was trying to do both of them. I had my first year at University of Memphis, which of course then was Memphis State.
Mm-hmm.
And shockingly, I was in nursing as well as
yeah.
music. Now, go figure that one.
I mean, I feel like you got to have something to fall back on.
Right, right.
You have to have something to fall back on.
Yeah, it didn't work for me though.
Well, thank God it didn't, because you have some gifts that the world needed to see, and they needed to. I mean, I'm sure you would have made a wonderful nurse.
Florence Nightingale, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
That's what I was shooting for.
Yeah.
It was something about all of those muscles and things like that that just wasn't, it just wasn't
yeah.
computing with me, and
yeah.
I could not get it. But what I wound up doing, I went to North Texas State,
mm-hmm.
which is University of North Texas now,
mm-hmm.
and I realized I had a gift of gab, and I had this amazing Southern accent at the time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so I wanted to really refine it and become better at speaking, and so, and perhaps teach it. and become a speech pathologist.
Wow, yeah.
That's what I
yeah.
want. So I decided to go and I got my degree in communication speech.
Okay.
And so I did that, and my minor, of course, was in music and, yeah. and all of the above. But I finished there, and after that, I came back home. Try to hang out here in Memphis for a little mm-hmm, bit. Mm-hmm. I decided that I wanted to learn more about recording engineering.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay.
So I went and got certified.
So you're probably feeling kind of at home right now in the studio.
I am. I yeah. love being in the studio. Yeah. I love it. It's like it's something, and I've always wanted to do that kind of thing that you're doing too. I said, one of these days I'm going to.
Well, I'll tell you what, I have, much like you, I have no background in any of this that we, you know, we've, for everyone listening at home, we're sitting in our studio at WYXR. I have this giant computer in front of me that has lots of knobs and yeah. screens, and we have really fancy microphones and headsets, and I am a total fish out of water. I never ever
really
I was an English major. I mean this is not.
And you, it's like you sold, just like, you know, well, it's amazing.
You learn to do it, you know, you,
yeah.
And you hone a skill when you have to exercise it.
Oh my gosh, it's yeah. so cool.
Yeah.
It's one of those things I've always wanted to, but I've never got there yet.
Okay. So. Well, we remind me after, you know, okay. Well, sidebar conversation, remind me to get you in touch with these folks at WYXR because we need to get you a regular show. Yeah.
That would be fun.
Okay. So, now it's on record. Everybody's hearing me say it. We're gonna see if we can deliver on that for Laura Winnett.
You guys heard her.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, after college, I came back here and I decided to go get certified in electronic recording. And then I was going through this just, I don't know what I'm here to do.
Yeah.
You know, you have a lot of different talents or gifts.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, God, what do I do?
About how old were you at this point?
I started that journey of what's my purpose when I was about 22.
Yep. Yep. That tracks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so
that tracks.
I'll never forget it. I was on the freeway getting off on the Brooks Road exit in Whitehaven. Mm-hmm. And I was just crying, saying, God, I don't understand what I'm here for. You know, help me understand my purpose.
Yeah.
And then it's honestly at that time that he really started speaking to me about moving.
Yeah.
And I didn't. You know, when you say to me as a stage person, move, I'm thinking New York. I'm like, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
New York's there and all of the above. But I was thinking the cold because I'm cold.
Yeah.
cold?
Yeah.
But that it was necessary for what I like to do. Right.
Yeah.
As
yeah,
a stage performer.
You have to go where the opportunities are.
Exactly. But God said, no, Los Angeles. And I was like, God, you're going to have to show me this one again.
Uh-huh.
And he did over and over again. And so my sister lived in Los Angeles. So I called her.
Okay.
And I said, hey, I'm coming to L.A. You know,
now, what was she doing in L.A.?
Well, my sister, she's the oldest and I'm the youngest. So her and her family, her two boys are only like 4 and 5 years younger than
me. Okay.
So,
gotcha.
Yeah. So I was like, you know, there, and I got there. On the train. Now, this is
one. So you took you took an Amtrak train?
I took a train. And let me tell you why.
Oh, be still my heart. I just love how romantic that is.
Let me tell you, I really needed time.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't want to just fly in.
Yeah.
I needed time to figure out and hear from God and really pray. And he sent me messages all through this train trip. It was a three-day train trip.
Mm-hmm. Almost like a retreat.
It was. And there was a man that I met on the train. And this is kind of like I said, how spiritual do you want me to go?
Yeah. Let's go there.
There was this little old man. And he came past me on the second day. And he said, hi. And I said, hi. He said, are you an actress? I was like, oh, my God. No. You know, and he said, you should be. And I was like, well, thank you. And it was like God was doing that. So then that night they had like the berths where you have your dinner. And he came past my berth. He said, I was thinking about you. You're going to Los Angeles. I said, yeah. And he gave me a list of like all of the trade papers and things.
Okay,
like
so
that.
Was this your angel?
It was, because I couldn't find him anymore after that.
Now, girl, I
couldn't find him anymore on that train. And so I had this list of all of the trade papers, of the Backstage West, the Variety, all these different things for me to do. He even gave me the name of agents.
Yeah.
Now, wow. he gave me the name of Betty Brown.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got to L.A., the last thing I did was go into the arts because I was very intimidated.
Yeah. So, yeah. That is a world that I can only just look at from, fourth, cousins removed.
Right.
But it's not.
And you have thousands and thousands of people there that are doing this.
And everyone is competing for like that je ne sais quoi. Yeah. It's like.
And it was very intimidating. So I started working for EDS,
mm-hmm.
uh-huh. Ross Perot's operation.
You do what you got to do.
And I started working for the city of Los Angeles. And I started working in city council. I did everything.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
wow.
My life in city council was fun. I was the senior deputy to Councilman Mike Wu, who was the one who mm-hmm. called for Chief Gates' resignation during the riots.
Yeah, yeah.
So. Mm-hmm. I was heavily involved in.
Oh wow! You were there for that moment in history.
Yeah,
wow.
It was a lot. It was a whole lot. And so I was doing all of that, and I was literally miserable. And in my 20s, I was stressed and all kinds of things. And so I was like, I just want to go home, God. He said, you're going to go home. You didn't do what I told you to do. And I was like, and then I knew exactly what he was saying. And I said, God, I don't know anybody here and all these people. And he said, pick their paper back up.
You sound a lot like Jonah. I'm just thinking like that. You sounded like a lot like Jonah.
Mine was fear. You know, yeah. Jonah's could have been fear though.
Yeah,
it could have been fear. And so I picked up the paper and there it was, all the different papers, that I should get the trade, and then the name Betty Brown. And this is what when you know it's a divine appointment.
Yeah.
So, I did call this one person that I had met. His name was Robert G. Mm-hmm. If you've heard of the group Atlantic Star,
yeah,
mm-hmm. yeah, he was lead singer.
Oh wow!
And I'd met him. I had to sing at this gospel awards thing, and I met him. And so I called him. I said, "Rob, I don't know the first thing about getting into the business," and he told me, "You're going to laugh at this." He said, "Chip Fields, who is Kim Fields?
Yes, yeah.
Chip Fields. She's teaching an acting class, and she's giving it." Teaching it for Christians at a very, very discounted price. I was like, what?
You're like, why is God like rolling out the welcome mat for me?
Oh, it was divine.
So, yeah.
So, okay. So I'm going to try to speed this thing really fast.
I mean, we've got time.
We got time. Okay.
Yeah.
So I don't have a car, so I have to ride all the way out to Burbank, which was a ways away.
Yeah, yeah.
To the class. Got there. Was a lot of people. And so she called in her daughter to teach as well. So here
Kim Fields.
Kim was my acting coach.
Okay, so for people who may not know who Kim is, can you tell me about Kim. Tell us about Kim.
Kim Fields is Tootie.
Yes,
she's Facts of Life.
From the Facts of Life. Precious, precious Tootie.
Precious, precious Tootie. And of course, on Living Single, she is Regine.
Yeah.
And she's done so many different things.
Yeah, she's still very active.
Very active. She's on Hallmark movies now and doing all kinds of things. She's amazing.
I love her.
So, yes. So, Kim Fields was my acting coach, which was bizarre, right?
You can't write your own story.
You really can't.
Sometimes you just have to, look back and say, okay, did I, when I was a child and I was singing in the choir and when I was being a student at Whitehaven High School, did I ever think that the woman who played a major character on one of the most iconic shows about the 80s, about teenagehood in the 80s would be my acting coach. You can't write that.
That's true.
That's
very, very, very true. And it was a great I was with them for 6 weeks before I got my first audition. I flopped.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But my second audition, they called and said, "La Renette, you need to go and audition. They're getting ready to bring Dreamgirls for a workshop here in Covina, California." I said, "Where is Covina?" And so they said, "Well, it's about 2 hours away from L.A. And I was like, "I have no car."
Yeah, yeah.
But there are buses that go and this, that, and other. So I'm like, yikes. Okay. I will go and audition. I only wanted to even think I could get chorus, if I could get chorus.
Yeah.
I got there really, really early because my bus got there like early. And one of the things I learned, and so for all of you actors out there, this is one thing you need to know.
Okay.
Get to know the people at the receptionist desk.
Yes.
Because if you get there early and develop a relationship with them, they kind of move your things through.
They're the ones that run the show.
They really are.
Yeah.
And so I was there really early and got to know her. We were talking, and next thing you know, they were getting ready to do the dance call for the next group. And she said, "You want to go ahead and do your dance call now?" I said, "Sure." Well, then my group was coming after that, right? And so I did the dance call, and I nailed that because that's who I was in the beginning, you know, but I was afraid about all the rest of it.
Yeah.
And so then they called me in to do the, you know, the singing, and I sang, and then they asked me would I stay and do some reading with.
You're like, "Yeah, I will. Yes.
Right.
Yes, I will stay."
Right. Absolutely, I will stay. And so I stayed and did some reading with Patrice Munsell, who was Dina Jones.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I was like, "Oh, my God." And she was so beautiful. And I was like, "Oh, my God." So then they called me the next day and said, "We have called you back for chorus." I said, "Fantastic."
Yeah.
And then they said, "And we would like to try you as understudy of Effie White."
What? And you're like,
"You gotta be kidding."
Yeah,
me.
Yeah.
And so I knew that Sabrina Wilson, who had done all of this stuff on Broadway and everything, was Effie White. And I was like, "Oh my God." So when I got there for the callback, and I went to the ladies' room to check, you know, to judge a little bit.
Yeah.
She was there. And I just looked at her and I was like,
"You're like,
oh my God." This woman, she's so gorgeous. And oh my God. And I said, "Hi." And everything. And she just kind of looked, she said, "Hello." And just passed right on out. And I was like, "Oh my God." And so I went in and sat down, and I went in and did my callback. And then they had me wait and wait and wait. And I was the last one.
Yeah.
And they called back in. I at one point thought, I said, "Well, I don't have it." But I called, you know, had me come back in, and they said, "Okay, we would like to cast you as understudy." But what that meant,
that means you have to be on call, right?
I have to be at every rehearsal.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Every rehearsal for the chorus and every rehearsal for the principals. And I live 2 hours away.
Yeah.
It was hard. And I said, "I don't know if I can do this, but I will try."
Yeah.
And so I did, and I would get sick, and I remember I wound up having like an asthma attack and in the hospital and all this stuff because I was getting literally, because I was working.
Yeah, you weren't sleeping.
I was getting like 4 hours of sleep, three hours of sleep a night, and then having to do the whole thing over again.
Yeah, and adrenaline can only take you so far.
Crazy. Yeah. And so finally, I just decided that I just couldn't do it anymore.
Yeah.
I said, "I can't do this. I feel like I'm killing myself." And then that's when God spoke to me. He said, "I need you to hold on."
Yeah.
And I was like, "Lord," he said, "I need you to hold on."
Wow.
And I said, "Okay." So I pushed it through. And then they asked me to help her with certain things because she wasn't at rehearsals.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, "I'm teaching her choreography." And I was like, and so even little neophyte me knew. I said, "Okay, now I can do this and I will do it." I said, "But what do I get for it?"
Yep.
You know?
Yeah, you got it.
And they said, "Well, what do you want?" And I said, "I would like to go up." "How many times you want to go up?" I said, "Could I go up 2 or 3 times?"
Yeah.
And they said,
"Now, does that mean, when you say go up, does that mean
go
like
go up as Effie?"
Yes. Like you are going to be on stage.
Right.
Like, and it's not a like, "Oh, if she's sick
right.
I almost said game day, on show day."
Exactly.
Like, you are guaranteed
to go up
some stage time.
Right. And that's when I said, "Okay, so I'm going to work this thing with the agents so I can get a good agent and everything and go up and have them there when I'm up on, you know."
Yeah,
and so they said, "Okay," they agreed. agreed to it. So I went ahead and taught her. But the one thing that they had not done was taught the main song in Dreamgirls, which was, and I'm telling you, they hadn't staged it.
Yeah.
And I was like, what are they waiting on? What are they waiting on? So one day, and Alex Nguyen, who from New York, he was the director.
Yeah.
And he was, he and Sabrina used to have like a, one of those kind of, you know, hit relationships.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so one day we were at rehearsal and he said, Lar, grab your book and come out with me. And so I said, okay. We went into the hallway and he staged it.
Yeah.
And I was like, she was there. And I was like, oh my God, what's going on? What is going on? So then the producers were coming in.
Ooh.
Right as he was looking at his watch, he said, I want you to do a full out for me. And the producers were coming in and they stayed there and watched me do it full out. And so then I was like, well, you know, in my mind, I'm not knowing what's going on.
Yeah, you're just like, okay, well, you're telling me to do a thing and I'm going to do it.
And so there was one of the producers, Diane Starzinski, I'll never forget. She says, she said, you did a really great job.
Mm-hmm.
But her thing was, she said, but she can't sell a show and we need someone that can sell a show. No one knows her. Sabrina Wilson's the name. And so I was like, I didn't know what was really going on. I'm like, well, I'm not trying to sell a show outside of the three that you guys have promised me.
Yeah.
So I'm like, it doesn't really matter at that point, you know. So lo and behold, we finally got to the actual stage and we were there 2 weeks ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And they were having hard times with, you know, Sabrina.
Yeah, yeah,
and lo and behold, what wound up happening is he came down the aisle and said, come here to the back. He said, I need you to go up as Effie. I said, he said, yes.
Wow.
I was like, he said, yes.
And you're like, this is the moment. Oh, man.
So can you believe that?
The way you tell the story, it's kind of like that. I want to do like some sort of meta performance of you, of you getting in the lineup for Dreamgirls. Like that is the show right there.
It was a show within a show, wasn't
it?
It was a surreal moment. I said, well, it's by default, but my God. So here it was.
Yeah.
I went up as Effie White in the workshop. And after that, we went to New York and we got ready for the tour. And
wow.
And that was history.
And that was it.
And I've done it. I've reprised this role 4 times after that wow. long run. It has been my career.
Yeah.
It has been my career. That role single-handedly made my career because when they saw that I did Effie on my resume in the Broadway tour, the doors would open.
Yeah.
And so I thank you, Effie White, you know,
man.
But it was great. And so after I finished the tour, and then I grabbed another tour, Little Shop of Horrors. So I was Crystal. Oh, Lord. You know,
so great.
So I did that. And then I started doing television film. Now here, I'm going to go back to something.
I needed an
agent. All these different things I was doing there. I was trying to get that Betty Brown person to come.
Mm-hmm.
I could not get her to come, but I was trying to get any agent. And none of them were really coming. Maybe one that was like, they had like all these classes of agents, your A, that's your William Morris's, and your B, and your C, and D. Now, Betty Brown, I studied, I found out that she was class C, which meant that she works with some stars, and she works with a lot of working actors.
Yeah.
But she was a way to get in, right?
So
I said, okay. So I was really trying to get her there with all these other agents and everything. And some would come, but it just never really worked out. And so I was about to give up on that. And I said, well, I'm going to just get out here and try to audition and hustle on my own.
Mm-hmm.
And then lo and behold, I'm doing a Little Shop of Horrors. And the guy who plays the plant, Anthony Camille, I'll never forget, his agent was Betty Brown.
There it is.
And so she comes to see him in the show, you know, her client and everything. I said, please, can you introduce me to her? This, that, the other. And he said, yeah. But he never did.
Yeah.
So I was like, so I got, after that show, I started getting some television and film.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's kind of where I was looking at you on IMDb and I'm like, she was on Seinfeld.
I started getting
NYPD Blue.
I did Arliss. That was one of my favorite. And movies, my favorite, I did Ghost of Mississippi.
Yeah.
And that was fun because it was everybody. Whoopi Goldberg, Alec Baldwin, James Wood. It was just insane. Merle Evers was actually on the set. It was so historic and so nostalgic and so Rob Reiner was directing.
Yeah.
Who could dream that? And then the subject matter was about Megar Evers. And it was just, of course, I'm from the South.
Yeah.
So it was such a poignant moment in my life, but I really, really started getting some, really cool
meaty roles.
Yeah, I did ER, Chicago Hope.
Yes.
So I had some fun. I had some fun doing that. And here's the spiritual part about that.
Yeah, I was going to ask. Because it's such a whirlwind. It seems like it would be if you are just constantly having to, make connections, and
it's a hustle.
It is. I can understand how life is not easy no matter what you find yourself doing.
Right.
But I can see how with that lifestyle it would be extremely easy to lose yourself. Lose yourself and lose what tethers you to your why. At the end of the day, what is all this for?
That is the reason why. And I always say this, and I'm kind of weird, but so hear me out here. But I always believe that artists have a very, very special place in God's heart, because we're creative and he is the master creator.
Yes.
So he understands us at a different level and we can connect with him at a different level. I'm sorry. I just kind of feel partial about that I really truly believe he understands the inner working of the creative mind because he created all of this.
Yes.
And so because of that, I feel that it's so important that artists have that relationship, because you will run into exactly what you just said, the why and what's it all for. And that's the reason why so many artists wind up on drugs and so many wind up in all kinds of stuff, because unless you have that connect and it helps to focus you and show you what purpose is really all about, why you were gifted, why you were given this, who it is that you're supposed to be reaching, who it is that you're supposed to do this for.
Right. It's kind of like, we've had a number of conversations as a part of this Behold It Unveiled series with artists, musicians. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I have noticed is that one of the recurring themes that comes up in our conversations is that artists have one foot in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like there's one piece of us that are trying to create something that is connecting with all of the people and the communities that we're embedded in. And the other foot is with God. And how can we be that bridge?
Right.
And it may not be like God, or it may not be like we call it different things, but no matter where you're coming from and what your medium is, you are trying to take a piece of who you see the divine to be and bring that and articulate that for the world in a way and reshape that so that others can connect with what that larger love, that larger divine is.
So well put. We are a bridge. We are a bridge. And that's one of the things that I share with artists all the time. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm all about the church. I was a church baby.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I was a little church mouse, and I still am to some degree.
Yeah,
My job keeps me out as much, more than I would prefer.
Yeah.
But as a church mouse, our gifts and our talents, yes, should be used there. But more importantly, our gifts and our talents are for the people that don't know him.
Yeah.
If we have Jesus within or have God within ourselves, we are a light to them.
Yes.
And then especially to the artists, because if they don't understand something and they connect with someone that has the light, they get it. they grow and they become stronger in what it is that they do, and hopefully develop that relationship with God so that they can keep on and be a light themselves.
Exactly.
And so, yeah, you're right. We are that bridge, just like you said that, you know, so.
So, I mean, I want to comment on one thing that you just said. I, you know, and about like having a sort of spiritual practice where you're at a church or, you know, you grew up in the church. The more I lean into what I think church, big mm-hmm. C church, what that church. Is, uh-huh. is, I mean, this is church.
Yeah.
Like right now, you and me.
Thank you.
This is church.
Gosh,
this is.
You need an applause on that. This
I mean,
is.
It is. We. Community is mm-hmm. church, and a place where we can
commune in unity.
Exactly.
Come on.
And worship. Exactly. And I mean,
I
am not ordained. I am not ordained.
It's okay.
So I can say that kind of stuff.
But you know what? That's one of the things that happened with me when I was in this business, because I grew up in a church.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And I became churchy.
You know yes. what I mean? Oh, same. I mean, I as you might imagine, I kind of like church. I work for the church. Like
I did too.
Yeah, yeah. Like my job, the person who signs my paychecks is the church, church right now. So I love church.
So, but it, here it was. I had a hard, how should you say, shift to doing this. What is considered to some church people as the world.
Yeah. Yes.
You know,
yeah.
I remember one person said, how can you call yourself a Christian and be up on the stage talking about I'm your dream girl, you know, all of that, you
yeah.
know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to really have some serious conversations with God, even about changing the way I thought. But let me tell you what the blessing part of that was. I remember one time we were in the prayer circle or a circle before we get ready to do a show.
Yeah, yeah.
And one of the producers said, okay, and gave the pep talk and then said, okay, so close your eyes and pray to whoever you pray to.
Yeah.
And let's do a moan.
Mm-hmm.
And then we open our eyes and we'll get ready to go. Right. Mm-hmm. And so they were moaning. I was like looking like, okay.
Yeah.
And so at the end of it, I said, okay, I'm getting ready to go over on the other side and pray to Jesus. If y'all want to come with me, come on. And
yeah.
So literally day by day, that circle got bigger and bigger and bigger
mm-hmm.
because it was a connect to something that is, the all-powerful God. That's what,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
the God of all gods. And so I was like, okay, yeah, the moan is cool.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
This is nice. I said, but I'm getting ready to go over here with Jesus. And God put, because I was Effie at that time, it put me in a position of leadership
yeah,
to say
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I would have people when I was doing a movie sets or a television, we're in the trailer and people would come, Laura, what do you think about this? And will you pray for me? Or can we just talk about this? So how do you do? I was like, to me, that was ministry.
Yes.
That was church.
Well,
so
that's
like what you're saying.
The ministry of availability.
Exactly.
And the ministry of like, there is a you feel comfortable sharing with me where you're at right now.
Yes.
I mean, that's.
And that's so important to be a person that they can feel mm-hmm. comfortable with to share, because that's really all of us. We all have our desires and needs and something that needs to be met, and having someone that you know that you can be open and real with, that's not going to
yeah.
judge you,
yeah.
that's going to be someone that's going to try to understand and give you real sound advice,
yeah.
you know, and that's so important. And so I was so blessed to be in that position, you know, to not judge people, to not say boom, 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 and what's right and what's wrong,
yeah,
but
yeah.
to just be a friend and be somebody and to try to show them love
and be that light
uh-huh.
that Jesus wants us to be.
Exactly.
And the way he
exactly
and to be a light in the world. And you know,
yeah.
I'll hold my comments on what you know, what it means to be in the world but not of the world.
Right, right.
I think God has given us the world, and I think the places that we are most afraid to go to, or the places that people tell us not to go.
Right.
Those are probably the places
where we need it.
Yeah. That's where Jesus and that's mm-hmm. where God wants us to be.
That's where we need it.
Because, I mean, who am I? Who am I to keep this transforming love mm-hmm. and understanding to myself.
Right. Right.
Who am I
within the circle of people that believe like me?
And who am I to deny myself from going into a situation where I can learn more about God's creation? Because we're limiting ourselves if we say, well, I'm going to not. I mean, obviously, there are limitations that we need to put in place for ourselves. Right. And there are. But
you are so right.
I want to lean into the places where no one else is going, because yes, that's where we can see God.
Let me tell you, you said the word right there when you said limiting, because what we tend to do, because of our, some of us are very narrow-minded in that, we tend to put God in a box and limit him.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
When he is vast, he is huge, and he knows everybody. He created us all. So he knows what is going to work. So while we're like, oh, I need to stay over here and mm-hmm. this, that, and other, that's not what you're created to. He says, go in the highways and the byways. He wants you to. I wonder when you say highways and byways. That's, you know what I'm saying?
That's everything.
Right. That's like crazy, you know, chaotic highways and byways to reach these people. So, yes, you know, he's not limited. He's not limited like we tend to, you know, and put him right here. So,
well, let me. OK, so I am just so curious about what eventually brought you back to Memphis and get us to where you're like. Corporate leadership comes in. Okay. You're coming back to Memphis and you're working for the Memphis Black Artists Alliance.
Yeah. Well, while I was in Los Angeles, of course, you know, that little girl that I told you about that liked to put things together
and coordinate
and write and all of that, I decided to go to Stellar Adler.
Yeah.
Now, I went first to Zoe Leadership, a Christian Leadership or Christian Leadership and Ministry Institute.
Uh-huh.
So I went there. So, because I really wanted to learn more about Christian leadership and learn more about mm-hmm. ministry mm-hmm. and learn more about who I am as a person.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I decided to go to Stella Adler School of Production. And there, that's when I learned more about arts administration and learned more about doing more to incorporate the directing and the playwriting and the producing, that sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And so after I went to Stella, and if you know Stella Adler, I was very fortunate to get there. That's one of the top schools in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I was very, very fortunate to do that. And so graduated from there. And now this budding producer, you know,
which
is what I was when I was a child.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And so then I came home for just a little hint, started my production company. But then I went to East Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You've heard of Cumberland County Playhouse? Yes.
Yeah.
I was with Jim Crabtree for a couple of years. And then he went to Knoxville and acquired a theater there and brought me in as associate producer.
Yeah.
He stayed there for about a year and then he left and went back to Cumberland and I took over as executive director.
Yeah.
Okay. So I was there doing that for a while. And then after that, because they decided to merge the Bijou with the Tennessee Theater and everything. So I left there and did a lot of freelance. That's when I started working for a church. But still continue to do this work because now I'm established in the city as a person that produces.
Yeah.
So I was always called upon to do this. And I get a little call from my, I think it was my sister-in-law, who said that my brother, my father had passed in 2012, and I came home, and I said, am I staying home, God? He said, no, not yet. So I had to go back.
Yeah.
And so I started working with, believe it or not, I was working with Amputee Coalition of America.
Wow, wow.
It was one of the best times of my life. I learned so much about producing.
Yeah,
because I had to produce these events for them.
Yeah.
And how to do it in impossible situations.
Yes, yes.
And so all of it was training, right?
Yeah.
And so then all of a sudden, my sister-in-law calls me and tells me my brother had a bad prognosis.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that my mom, you know, would be well taken care of by him no matter what. You know, mm-hmm. he would call me if something, if I need to come home. And if he had a bad prognosis, it's time for me to come home.
Yeah.
So before, and I prayed and asked God many times, do I go home? Do I go home? He said, you'll know when.
Yeah.
And when I got that call, I was like, it's time to go. And I said, oh God, I didn't ask you. He said, I told you, you would know when. So I packed my bags and I came home and I was very glad I did. He only was with us 3 weeks after I got here.
So the
and
timing
I think he was holding on. He was holding on for me to get here and be assured that I was going to be here with mom.
Yeah.
And so then stayed here with mom. And so I said, well, what am I going to do? So I decided to go to the city.
Yeah.
And I got a job with the city comptroller's office.
Yeah.
My father used to be CPA. I used to kind of help him around.
Yeah.
So started working in accounting with the city comptroller's office.
And, okay, kids, that's why you finish school.
Because
sometimes, like, I want to be creative all the time. I want to be producing podcasts and doing all this kind of stuff. And
Acquire other skills.
But
it's important.
At the end of the day, sometimes you need to have a skill set that is always in demand and you can plug yourself into where you're needed.
And let me tell you, all of these things actually factor into what it is that I'm doing now. If I had not done these other things, I would not know how to run this organization.
Yeah.
You know, when at the end of the day, the accounting experience helps me with the accounting and bookkeeping with this mm-hmm. organization. Mm-hmm. The administration of other things helped me to administrate. So I tell you, you know, if I worked in HR when I was in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. guess what? That HR component is what helps me now.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
all of it, you know, comes together.
Yeah.
So it's like, don't shy away from it. You know, go ahead and grab those extras
and learn
and recognize that it's not permanent. That's not who you are, but that is a skill that you can acquire and learn that will definitely pay off down the road.
Yeah, and it may not be that from my experience, mm-hmm. it may not be that you're learning accounting in a scenario where, like, oh, this is life-giving and fulfilling and I love going home at the end of the day. But eventually, you will be in a position where
you're going to know how to do it.
And the fact that it, even though it wasn't fun when you were learning it the first time around, it gets fun to do those kind of minute, tedious things within a context that speaks to you and that fulfills you.
And let me tell you, when it comes to, she says accounting, you are an artist and you're an independent artist. Yeah. You need to learn how to do your own bookkeeping because you're an independent contractor.
Yep.
And at the end of the day, when it comes to this, you need to learn how to handle your own books.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And juggle your finances in a way that's going to be profitable for you. So,
and advocate for yourself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah, I decided to come in and I was working for who now is the CFO for the city financial officer for uh-huh. the city of Memphis. I was working for Shirley Ford, who was the comptroller.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And she and I are still very close today. I got the call from Benny Nelson West, who is the founder of Memphis Black Arts Alliance. And she said, you know, I'm looking for my replacement. I said, oh, okay. Well, that's awesome. You're getting ready to retire. She's like, yeah. I said, well, I'll send you some names.
Yeah.
So I did. I sent her some names.
And she's like, you're not catching what I'm pitching.
So she came to me again and she said, well, you know what? Have you thought about it? I said, oh, no, Miss Benny. No, I can't do this. No. And then she said, okay. And I gave her some more names. You know, I know people all over the country that gave her some more names. And so then she came back a third time and she said, before you say no, just consider. I said, Missy, she said, just consider. So that's when I prayed.
Yeah.
I said, oh, Lord. Because I knew I was going into a situation that, you know, we're a nonprofit charity. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that it had been kind of dormant for a little while because she had gone through so much.
Yeah.
There was no money. And I knew that this was going to be hard work, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I said, God, and so it was a no for me.
Yeah.
And, you know, but then God said, hold on. Everything that you've learned throughout the years is for this moment right now.
Shh. Goosebumps. Yeah.
I was like, wow.
You're like, when you put it on paper, it's like,
all of it.
I'm qualified for this and I can probably nail this
in
a major way.
Right.
Maybe I'm just what this organization that serves such an important goal in the city of Memphis.
And I tell you, I was talking with a young lady who was talking about she wanted to quit her job. And I quit and I just can't. I said, I can't really say anything to you about that. I said, because I pretty much quit every day. I said, but God always reminds me that this is not up to me right now. And it's funny. I said, God, I don't want to do this. And he said, Okay. All right. I'm doing it. Yeah. And things, I have seen such amazing, amazing doors open as a result of me hanging here and just pushing and pushing and pushing through.
Yeah.
There have been a lot of things to discourage, you know, because mm-hmm. it's nonprofit.
Yeah.
And it's a minority organization yes. on top of that. So, because for me, every organization that I've worked with before was multicultural. Yeah. So it was a whole new thing I had to learn, you know, to do this. The same tactics that I would use to do it in an organization that is of other cultures mm-hmm. is not the same that I had. So it was a learning. I had to learn things as well. But I've grown a lot with this organization, and this organization has grown as well.
Yeah.
And now we... Oh my God, there have been, well, first of all, it's 40 years old.
Yeah, as of May 7th.
So there are hundreds of thousands of people that this organization has touched over the years.
Yeah.
But since I've been here in 2016, we have actually managed to compensate thousands of artists.
Mm-hmm.
We have taught, like 10,000 students.
Yeah.
And we have, engaged hundreds of thousands of people as well.
And it's primarily performing arts, right?
Because we're an alliance. Yeah.
Yes.
We're an alliance. We do, of course, most arts, when you say arts, you think either visual or you think musicians mm-hmm. and singing and things like that. But we support culinary arts.
Yeah.
We support writers. We just had a writing workshop not too long ago.
Yeah.
We're getting ready to open a visual arts workshop. An exhibit on tomorrow.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. Awesome.
Her name is Martina Taylor. This is her first.
Where is that going to be on display?
It's going to be at our home office, which is the Firehouse.
Okay.
Which is the Memphis Black Arts Alliance Firehouse. And it's located at 985 South Bellevue Boulevard.
Excellent.
And it's right in the gateway. When you're coming from Midtown, you go under the bridge.
Yep.
We're right on your right, right there on the in the gateway of Soulsville.
USA. Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to get out there and see it
for
sure.
Come on out. And we, you know, it's been so awesome. Now we partner with the symphony. Of course, we partner with Overton Park Shell.
Yeah, yeah.
Partner. We did a co-production with Playhouse on the Square last Christmas.
Yeah.
We've done workshops with the Orpheum. We're, you know, we're now doing great things. And the fun part about this for me is the youth.
Yeah.
We have been able, through our Arts Reach program, to take nearly 300 children to see shows at the Orpheum.
Wow.
At discounted prices, and if or free. These kids are underserved.
Yeah.
Many of them have walked in and never been inside the Orpheum, even though they live in the area.
Yeah.
They've never been inside. They're walking in looking like
this. Yeah. And the Orpheum, even as an adult,
yes,
I'll go in there
opulence.
And be like,
yeah. Opulence. What? It's just beautiful.
It's gorgeous. Yeah.
And so you can imagine these kids that don't get a chance to see anything like this. And they walk in, they're like, my God. And I'm like, yes. And so, and they're walking out, they're inspired, they're encouraged, and they're hopefully in a position to shift their communities as a result of learning that there is something positive that can come from visioning and dreaming and pursuing.
Wow. Well, I just resonate so much with what you're saying about how every single thing in your life prepared you for where you are now.
Yeah.
And I love the way over the last hour, when you roll out your story and you share your story about where you came from and where you are now, there is such a beautiful openness to everything, all of the opportunities that God has given you and how you've responded to that with faithfulness.
Yes.
And it's just such a beautiful, I mean, I know that there's a lot more to
come.
Yeah. There's so much more to come.
Yeah. I believe that.
But we all are works in progress.
Yes, we are.
And we're all, God is talking.
Yes.
We just got to put our little antenna up and just say, okay,
yes.
Where are you leading me? And I just appreciate
and trust it. and trust that he know. I tell people, so God, you are smarter than me, so
yeah,
you know a little bit more than I do.
So
I need to trust you, you know, when even though I'm looking at situations and circumstances and they may not seem like they're lining up or they seem like they're impossible, and yet I feel in my spirit that I need to go in that direction.
Yeah.
I gotta trust beyond, which that's what faith is.
Yeah,
faith is believing past what you see, you know.
Well, we've got a few minutes left, and I have one question for you that we always end our show with. Mm-hmm. What, Larwinette, is giving you hope right now? Like, what gives you hope in this world, that this crazy world that we're living in?
What is giving me hope? That is a wonderful question. I would say knowing that I have an opportunity to fulfill my purpose, that I am here for a reason. I've been giving these tools for a reason, and knowing that there is something out there that those tools are actually meant to talk with or to combine with or connect with, that gives me hope. Knowing that there is a reason for what it is I'm here for, my existence.
Well, I love it. Mm-hmm. I love it. Well, thank you so much for spending this early hour of the day with me.
I love it.
I kind of get the feeling that you're an early morning person, too.
I
tend to be, too, but I don't ever assume that on other people because the early morning hours can be rough. But I certainly, you have put some wind in my sails.
Oh,
and so I just appreciate you sharing your journey. Where can people learn more about you and the Memphis Black Arts Alliance and engage with all that y'all are doing?
Well, please, by all means, we have so many things coming up, especially for the holiday season.
Mm-hmm.
You can go on to our website, which is www.memphisblackarts.org.
Okay.
And you can keep up with a lot of things we're doing. We're getting ready to have our big, huge legacy ball.
Okay.
Which is going to be at the Halloran Center, where we're going to celebrate Benny Nelson West.
Okay.
One of the first persons of color in this city to do something of this magnitude that has lasted 40 years.
Wow.
And so we are going to celebrate her, give her her due.
Yeah.
She deserves it.
Yeah.
And so
get your tickets, y'all.
Get your tickets, because I tell you, it's going to be great. We're bringing in, we want to celebrate other artists that are from here, like Elise Neal and Evie McKinney. We wanted to get Leslie, but we hadn't heard back from her. We wanted to get Couture. She's pending. But all of these people that are Black artists that are from this area that have gone out to do amazing things in this world.
Yeah.
Lester Snail, Jimmy Kennard, Chris, I can't think of his last name, but I'm looking at it, Streeter.
Yeah.
I mean, Charles Streeter, not Chris, Charles Streeter. We have so many people that are doing things throughout the world, not just in the city.
Yeah,
even in the country.
Exactly.
They're worldwide, and they're from this area. And so we want to celebrate them.
Well, let's get there. Let's get tickets. Let's support you and your work as much as we possibly
can.
Thank you so much for being on the show with me today. It has been such a pleasure.
It has been a pleasure
to connect
with you.
And thank you all for tuning in today and for joining us for Faithfully Memphis. You can listen to past episodes of Faithfully Memphis on our podcast, and it's on Apple, Spotify, all the usual suspects. If it really, 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 a million more reallys helps us out when you rate and review, leave us a positive review wherever you listen. That kind of boosts our ranking so that more people can find out about our show. So if you do that, if you don't want to leave us a review, share the episode with a friend who may not have heard it, but you think might connect with something that we've talked about today on the show. My name is Emily Austin. I am from the Episcopal Church in West Tennessee. You can learn more about our churches on our website, edwtn.org. You'll find lots of great resources about churches that want to welcome you here in West Tennessee on our website. And until next time, thank you so much for listening. Stay safe and stay positive.